Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program. And Brother Yasser and Sayyid Abdullah, my guest speakers, helping me criticize the movie Seventh Son, directed by Sergei Butrov, produced in 2014. Brother Yasser, the apprentice's mother, who just died in the movie, near the end of the movie, or rather was killed by the Queen of the Dark, the evil witch, returns to her wounded child, of course, in a spirit form, and asks him to endure and keep fighting. Her son asks her, "How is it possible that you are back after death?" She replies, "I've passed on from this world." Doesn't it refer to the life or to the concept of life after death and the journey everyone is doomed to travel?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Not doomed, but destined rather to travel.
Yes.
Again, the concept of life after death, what actually happens, has been a concept or a phenomenon has, plagued the minds of human beings from the very onset of humanity. Like, what happens when I leave this material realm? And therefore Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, out of His mercy, sent down those who knew to explain to human beings, so don't worry, your journey doesn't end with this material world. There's another journey waiting for you. Your journey continues. This is one stage and one stop of it. And that's what we have in the traditions and in the hadith of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, that just like a fetus in the womb of its mother goes through that journey and then comes into a new world, and then it's the same thing. You're just in a bigger womb, you're going to go into another world. So there's no difference to it.
What do you say to the materialists who say that there is no life after this world?
Because they have no proof for it. So one of the things, even in their own scientists, and the other things, they say you cannot make a conclusion on something you have no proof for.
Yes.
Therefore, instead of you making a direct statement, you should rather remain silent.
Mm-hmm.
The best thing about a materialist, because you are dealing with something that is metaphysical, beyond matter. There's nothing to do with matter.
Yeah.
Therefore, it is outside of your realm of discussion. You have no right to give an answer or a verdict. Therefore, you have to either remain silent or refer your question to somebody who is in that field, i.e. a philosopher, i.e. a theologian, i.e. a mystic. Obviously, the divine mystics and the divine philosophers and the divine theologians.
There are certain people who have experienced out-of-body experiences or astral projection. And now they say that, for example, because of like necessities, like they've been in a state of coma, for example, or they nearly died, basically.
So you have this, what are known as near-death experiences.
Yes, near-death experiences.
I mean, the whole thing that's
they have experienced it and they came back and they came back with the stories.
Yes, they came back, so they saw certain things. And it's not something that is unique to a particular culture or to a particular place. It's something that is, you can call it universal.
Mm.
Throughout all religions and throughout all cultures and all places throughout the world and so on and so forth. It just, again, does this particular event prove or disprove something? No. It can be something that confirms it or emphasizes it, but it cannot be used as a proof.
Yes.
Because, for example, what that person saw, you and I did not see, nor can a person intellectually or somehow prove it to me and you. So it can't be used as a rational proof for or against.
It can be a proof for the person who experienced
it. Well, proof for experience, again, to a certain level.
Yes. Okay, thank you very much. Let's take a short break by listening to a short part of the movie Seventh Son, directed by Sergei Butrov, produced in 2014, and then we'll be back with his question and criticism. Don't go away.
Let us show them what we do to cities that burn witches. We will avenge our brother's death. Let us give the world a taste of what is to come.
Back to the program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio, with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and my guest speakers, Brother Yasser and Sayyid Abdullah, helping me criticize the movie Seventh Son, directed by Sergei Butrov and produced in 2014. Well, we are still continuing the criticism of this movie, Sayyid Abdullah. In the nearly end of the movie, you can see a lot of these actions, witchcraft, and not only this movie, you can compare it with the lots of other movies. Lots of scenes in this movie and others with the same theme portray some legacy or heritage or trace of the legend concerning the war between humans and witches. So that's the whole story about all these movies, right? Yeah. If we look at the history, we find out it was kind of real. I mean, the war, it really exists. When the humans used to burn witches alive and sometimes even innocent women and girls by accusing them of being one, a witch.
Yeah.
Under the disguise of ideology. What do you think? Why is there this animosity between them? Don't we have any good witches or magicians as well as bad ones?
Look, the idea is that there are magicians, there are witches. Even the Quran testifies to that when he says, وَمِن شَرَ النَّفَّاثَاتِ فِي الْعُقَدِ, those who do their spells and magic at night, and they try to do that to the Prophet.
We have it stated in the story of Moses and Pharaoh.
Yeah, so
the magicians came.
Yeah, so even in the Quran, especially with Sulaiman alayhi salam, there's a lot of magic happening. The Malikain, the Quran talks about Bibabil Harta wa Marut ya'alluman as-sihr. They teach people magic.
Yes.
So there's a lot of magic in Islam, like the text-wise. And even the magician in Islam, his punishment is death. So, yeah. So what happened is that when Islamically looks at the concept of magic, is that you use the power of magic, the power of spells, to harm other human beings. And this the whole science of magic in Islam is forbidden, it's haram. You're not allowed to go into it. And if a person is known to be a magician, then he needs to be executed. Now, back in the day...
But we also have karamas or wonders which are performed by the mystics, like even Islamic mystics.
Karamas and stuff, we have something else. You know what I mean? This is a completely different issue. Because magic, people like the Quran, when he talks about magic, he says, يَعْلُمَانَ النَّاسَ السِّحْرِ. They teach people magic for لِيُفَرُّقَ بَيْنَ الزَّوْجِ وَزَوْجِ. They would learn just so they can divide between a husband and a partner, or they can harm other people.
Even some ulama are saying, if you do the converse, that wouldn't be a magic.
Yeah, so some of the ulama, they say, even if you wanted to study magic, but you want to use it for a good way to help people, some of the ulama make a statement. So this notion was also back in the day was happening, where there are people who learn the witchcraft. And black magic was very strong back in the day.
Yes.
And the people, like when they know that this person is doing it and harming other people, they used to kill them. And in the process of this whole chaos, a lot of women got burned for no reason. Because how do you know she's a witch or he's a witch? Because he said so. Because she said so. Like, what have you seen? So it's not easy to prove someone is a magician. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And some people, like, they go into this kind of work, but especially now in some of the Arabic Muslim countries, we have a lot of people who claim to be magicians. In Iraq specifically, they refer to them as Abbas. they give them that title, where people go pay a lot of money, and she would do a lot of stupid things, and she would give it, like, oh, this is gonna work, carry this, drink this, eat this, and so on and so forth, which is nonsense. You know, because magic itself is a very hard science to master and to get to know about.
I see. Thank you very much, Sayyid Abdullah and Brother Yasser, for your nice comments and answers to my questions regarding the criticism of the movie Seventh Son, directed by Sergei Bodrov, produced in 2014. And fortunately, we have finished the criticism in this episode of this movie. Thank you very much, my dear listeners, for listening to program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio. We bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
If you see a witch, kill it.
We're not all evil, you know.
I can't do this.
I'm not like you.
Join us.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Ruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
In response to the European Union's naval mission in the Red Sea, Yemen's Deputy Minister of Foreign Affairs Hossein Al-Azzi held a press conference addressing Yemen's stance on the tensions in the region. He urged EU members to withdraw their warships from the Red Sea, emphasizing that militarization of the region will only escalate the conflict.
Certainly, we will deal with any country who engages in hostilities against us, and we will deal with it as we dealt with the US and the UK. We are keen to treat everyone equally and will never allow the European Union or others to attack Yemen without getting a firm response. Whoever harms Yemen, we will harm him severely.
Al-Azzi noted that since the start of the Yemeni army's naval operations, over 5,000 vessels, including European ones, have safely passed through the Bab al-Mandab Strait after coordinating with Yemeni authorities. He also reaffirmed the safety of international maritime navigation for the entire world except for those who carry out hostile actions against Yemen.
The recent move by France targeting Yemeni drones is up for discussion. We have serious questions regarding the matter, and we expect Paris to provide us with reasonable explanation. If France does not apologize, and we are certain that Paris is following the British and American approach, we will respond because we have the right to self-defense. What is being practiced against American and British ships is due to their aggression against our country and their complicity in the ongoing genocide in Gaza.
Yemeni army has not targeted any European ships in its recent operations in the Red Sea and Gulf of Aden. However, the European Union has launched the naval mission Aspides to counter potential attacks on American, British, and Israeli-linked vessels.
Observers believe that the U.S. is dragging European countries into a direct war with the Yemeni army to protect its own interests in the region. They assert that an EU military intervention will impact the shipping of food and fuel to Europe, thereby destabilizing European countries. Al-Latif Al-Washali, Sanaa.
Julian Assange's many and vocal supporters out in numbers again as the WikiLeaks founder's extradition hearing resumes. Locked up in the high-security Belmarsh jail on the edge of London since 2019, Assange didn't attend the hearing because of his poor health. In one sense, the argument has not changed. The U.S. claims he's guilty of spying and wants him to face a court in the States. His backers say his case is a threat both to the rule of law and to the very foundation of proper journalism.
It would have a devastating blow to journalism worldwide. If an Australian journalist that is publishing in Europe can be imprisoned in the United States, not a single journalist anywhere in the world is safe. This is the reason why all major press freedom organizations, human rights organizations, freedom of speech organizations in the world are rallying behind Julian, because they recognize the seriousness of the implication of this case if it goes ahead.
Over the years, Assange's case has attracted a lot of attention, most recently from his native Australia, a U.S. ally. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese and his cabinet ministers were among those who backed a parliamentary motion introduced by independent Andrew Wilkie, calling for Assange to be returned home.
The Australian Parliament, at least, is muscling up a little and prepared to be a little bit more assertive with Washington, at least on the Assange issue, and that's a good thing. That's Australia growing up a little. And maybe it will have some influence in Washington and help to get a political resolution to this.
It's been long since WikiLeaks published evidence of American forces attacking journalists and other innocent people in Iraq. Evidence that in another context would have been applauded as the uncovering of war crimes in the interest of the public.
The fundamental question here is how can countries that lecture the world on all kinds of freedoms criminalize investigative journalism?
A final decision is yet to come, but if the judges decide in favor of the U.S., Assange's only remaining recourse to avoid extradition would be the European Court of Human Rights. Saeed Pourreza, London.
Shoppers at the popular Wuse market in Abuja, the Nigerian capital, are having tough times as skyrocketing rise in the prices of commodities has taken a heavy toll on ordinary people. Prices of commodities, especially food items, have gone up more than 100%, and indeed, they've continued to rise on a daily basis.
Cost of living is something else. It's terrible. A common man with a salary of 30,000 cannot buy a bag of rice of almost 80,000 naira.
There is hunger, terrible hunger, and high rise of stealing, thief, everything just keep going higher.
Bag of cement, it's like about 9,000, he just bought it. I said, wow, 9,000, where are we going? Bag of rice, 77,000.
Experts say, apart from the economic policy of devaluing the Nigerian currency, removal of multiple exchange rate windows has further weakened the naira against the dollar, resulting in inflation and harsh economic woes to the people. They said grinding poverty has created a sense of hopelessness in an already impoverished population, pushing many people to the edge.
IMF said we should devalue, we are devaluing. But what are the consequences of this on the economy, on the purchasing power parity that has even existed before now? We made money during the windfall when oil was at the price of oil was at its peak in the international oil market. But what did we do with this humongous amount that we made? It was frittered away through corruption.
Experts also said, at inception on 29 May 2023, the new government in Nigeria removed the subsidy on petrol, which pushed the prices of petrol up, resulting in the rise of goods and services, which further made things worse for the poor in Nigeria. But they said there are immediate solutions that can bring relief.
Nigeria is for Nigerians, so every Nigerian should benefit. So if the people want subsidy, they should reinstate that very particular subsidy. Or we fix our refineries. It's even dubious that today we are producing oil, but we subject the sales of our oil to American dollar, price them in dollar.
Pockets of protests over the economic hardship have started springing up in some Nigerian cities. Meanwhile, the Nigerian Labour Congress has called for a two-day nationwide strike on 27 and 28 February in protests over the rising cost of living.
The Nigerian government has promised to take proactive steps to mitigate the economic problems people are facing. Experts, however, say the government should first solve the persistent insecurity in Nigeria to be able to focus on agriculture for food security. They also say human capacity must be developed so that the Nigerian population becomes an asset instead of a liability. Tanjum Abdullahi, Abuja.
As the assault on Gaza escalates again with the death toll since October 7 nearing 30,000, pro-Palestinian protests are gaining momentum in Canada. During nationwide rallies, protesters criticized Prime Minister Justin Trudeau for his inaction.
Palestinian.
On the cusp of the Israeli invasion of the southernmost city of Gaza, Rafah, the people of take to the streets, joining cities across Canada, calling on their government to take measures to stop Israel's genocide of the Palestinian people.
I'm here to ask for ceasefire right now. Enough is enough. It has been taking a long time for our government to stand up and call for ceasefire. This is not the right way to do it. We have to get arms embargo.
I'm at a loss for words, to be honest, but what's going on, it's the end of the line. It's a death camp, and we want to, again, pressure our politicians, pressure our communities, hands off Rafah.
Although the government of Canada has called for a ceasefire, demonstrators noted that since October, Ottawa has approved $28.5 million of military exports to Israel. They see this, along with the refusal of the Canadian government to call the assault on Gaza genocide, tantamount to a stab in the back of the public's demands. Robert N. Lakesh, Calgary.
Tens of thousands of farmers are standing their ground on the outskirts of New Delhi ahead of planned crucial talks. The Farmers' March comes 2 years after similar protests that lasted for a year against new agricultural reforms that were later scrapped by the government of Premier Modi. As general elections are due in the coming months, the farmers are mounting pressure on the government, demanding legislation that would guarantee minimum support price for their produce.
We are protesting to guarantee prices for our crops. The previous government had schemes in support of farmers, but the present government is making laws which are against farmers and not acceptable to us. They want to sell India's agriculture sector to corporations, but we will protest till our demands are met.
The protesting farmers are mostly from the neighboring state of Punjab and Haryana. They say rising cultivation costs and debts have led them to increase their production of crops. Therefore, a guaranteed minimum support price for their produce would stabilize their income. They are also demanding the government fulfill its election pledge to double farmers' income and waive their loans and withdraw any legal case filed against them during earlier protest.
This government wants to destroy us. All the promises before elections turned futile. We want debt waivers, pensions for farmers and laborers, and the withdrawal of all legal cases filed against protesting farmers during the 2021 March. We are peacefully marching towards the capital, but the government is using tear gas to stop us as if we are outsiders. But we will fight till our demands are fulfilled.
Since the march started, several meetings between leaders of farmers and government ministers have ended inconclusively. The ministers of Modi's government, however, expect a peaceful solution. The two sides are expected to meet soon, as Prime Minister Modi has already said his government is working on more inclusive schemes to benefit farmers. His party also claims to have already doubled the minimum support price from 1,000 to 2,000 Indian rupees, a claim that farmers deny. The protests come at a time when the country is gearing up for general elections in few months' time. The farmers are seen as an important section of the voting population. Experts say Modi is expected to secure a third term despite the protest. They say it is, however, crucial to strike a deal with the protesting farmers to secure a long-term solution, since successive governments have failed to appease them.
Most of the vital roads leading to the capital, New Delhi, have been fortified, like this one. And massive barricades have been erected across all sides of the border to make sure the protesters are confined to outside the city. Tens of thousands of farmers are camping just a few miles away from the capital. They say they will keep marching to the capital unless there is a breakthrough in negotiations. Munawar Zaman, New Delhi.
Anger in the streets of London. Another mass protest. A turnout of hundreds of thousands. Veteran campaigners, young activists, British Jewish groups.
It's the fourth national demonstration of the year and the second one to end outside the Israeli embassy here in London. And their message, these protesters say, is clear. Stop the genocide now.
That's what they have been demanding for more than 4 months now. And the impending Israeli incursion into the southern Gaza city of Rafah, that shelters more than 1.5 million Palestinians, accounts for today's turnout, one of the largest since it all began.
We're watching these messages, we're watching these videos of people getting slaughtered on a daily basis, but we're not insensitized to this. The Western media, the Western world is desensitized to this. Well, we won't. We will stand for our Palestinian brothers and sisters in Gaza, in the West Bank, wherever, to get rid of this cancer that is Zionism, and we're going to fight until the day that Palestine is free.
A free Palestine is yet to come. But there is a chance for British politicians to stop the ongoing mass slaughter. On February 21st, MPs, representatives of the British public, will be voting on a second ceasefire motion. The first such vote, November last year, didn't pass muster. We asked Ben Jamal of the Palestine Solidarity Campaign what message a no vote would send to the Palestinians.
It will deliver a message to the Palestinian people that the British Parliament says your lives don't matter. The message we've delivered today is that they do matter to the British people, and that now the British Parliament needs to start listening to what the British people are saying.
The political party's position on Israel's genocidal war on Gaza has taken center stage in this year's upcoming general elections in the UK. And the protesters here say it determines which way their vote will go. Saeed Purizza, London.
Supporters of the jailed Pakistani former Premier Imran Khan and his party, Pakistan Tehreek-e-Insaf or PTI, held nationwide protests on Saturday to condemn alleged manipulation in the February 8 general election.
The mandate that the people of Pakistan has given the independent, so-called independent candidates backed by none other than PTI, because our election symbol was taken away, our entire leadership is behind jails with sham, aapke jo mukadmaat hai. So this doesn't make any sense. When the people have spoken, they have to be respected. Otherwise, they will be on the street, it will be chaos, and no government, no political party will be able to rule.
Supporters of Imran Khan's party insist that widespread electoral manipulation has deprived their party of achieving 2/3 majority in the parliament.
I voted for Imran Khan, but I'm speaking as a Pakistani voter. I voted, I was there at 7:45 in the morning. I wanted to be first in line so that I could vote. By evening, our candidate was winning, everything was fine. 3 in the morning, suddenly the man lost, and he lost by 20,000 votes or God knows something like that. How is this possible? This is not possible and this is not acceptable.
However, Imran Khan's rival political group, Pakistan Muslim League Nawaz, says the PTI party tried to derail democracy by creating controversy around elections. A dramatic change in the political climate occurred when the commissioner of Rawalpindi, a city in northern Pakistan, tendered his resignation, citing a guilty conscience for his role in enabling widespread electoral manipulation in the garrison city.
We converted the losers into winners with 70,000 votes margin. The chief election commissioner and chief justice are involved in poll fraud. I accept all the responsibility. I should be hanged. I cannot participate in the crime that could destroy Pakistan.
This is while Pakistan's election commission has rejected claims made by the Rawalpindi commissioner, stating that no official of the electoral body gave any direction to him regarding the manipulation of results.
The outcry over alleged vote rigging in the recently held elections for national and state legislatures has sparked widespread protests among multiple political factions. Analysts warn that the absence of a clear mandate for any political party could lead to prolonged political instability and hinder efforts to address economic challenges of the country. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked in
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant factor.
Imamat yek asl zinda dar tarikh Islam.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu alaikum to you dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Very welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. Stay tuned.
اینجوری که کف امی نقل کرده ترتیبشون اینجوریه که چهار حلقه هستن، چهار رتبه هستن. حلقه اول چهار نفر از اوتاد.
According to Al-Kaf'ami in his book Al-Misbah, there are four groups or circles of people who, based on their highest to lowest ranks, are always around Imam Al-Mahdi as his companions. They are called the four pillars or Otad, seven elects or Abdal, 40 spiritual chiefs or Nuqaba, and finally 360 men of the invisible world or Rajal al-Ghaib. It is difficult to be among the first two groups, but if we try, we can be among the two last groups. This means that Imam al-Mahdi recruits even now when he is in major occultation or Ghaibat al-Kubra. These people are selected by Imam from among different groups of people with different jobs, and if they die, someone like them in rank is replaced.
اگر جزو ابدال و اوتاد شدن کار مشکلی است، جزو اون حلقه سوم و چهارم شدن امکان پذیره ها.
It is difficult to be among the first two groups of اوتاد and ابدال. And even it is difficult to be among the Nuqaba and Rijal al-Ghaib. However, we can at least be pious and do our obligations in a way that makes Imam al-Mahdi's heart happy with us. In better words, being a companion to Imam al-Mahdi is difficult, but doing our best to get close to such ranks is really liked by Allah and Imam al-Mahdi ajalallah. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website parstoday.ir Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. In the U.S. Senate Republican sphere, Donald Trump will tap the Republican National Committee to cover his legal expenses. The former president is going to put his people in place on the Republican National Committee. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. The American newspaper The Daily Beast has covered this story and tells us more. First came the internal grumbling about Ronald McDaniel, the chairwoman of the Republican National Committee. Then came McDaniel's decision to step down from her post at the end of February as she lost the support of Donald Trump. After that came Donald Trump's move to put forward a slate of loyalists to take over the party's top spots, including an election-denying state party chair, a Trump campaign senior advisor, and the former president's own daughter-in-law. Next could come the purge. I think within 30 days you'll see a purge of staffers from the Republican National Committee because it's a hotbed of anti-Trumpism, Steve Bannon, Donald Trump's former chief strategist and host of the War Room podcast, told the Daily Beast. That's the open secret. Skeptical holdouts within the Republican National Committee have gotten the message. Their days are numbered. But it's not just RNC staffers who are not safe. It's also the party's 168 committee members and consultants who have enjoyed friendly business relationships with the party, according to GOP sources familiar with the dynamic who spoke with the Daily Beast. I think there will be a whole new 168, and they've been working around the country to make it a full Trump 168, a source close to the Republican National Committee told the Daily Beast. Trump's gonna make his own rules here, and he wants his own people in there. The new Republican National Committee leadership slate, which still needs to win the support of a majority of the 168 members, is about as MAGA as it gets. Trump's daughter-in-law, Lara Trump, is the highest-profile addition, tapped to serve as a co-chair, chiefly tasked with fundraising. Chris LaCivita, one of the top advisors on the Trump campaign, will serve in a de facto chief operating officer role, despite the position technically not existing within the RNC. Trump loyalist Michael Whatley, chairman of the North Carolina state GOP, is in line to directly succeed Ronald McDaniel as party chair. One of their main goals is overhauling the Republican National Committee. According to a source familiar with the plans, is to rid the apparatus of so-called partycrats, those who have been climbing the ladder in Washington, D.C., working for GOP organizations, and replace them with staffers who have more campaign experience. The new and staunchly MAGA crew will take control of the Republican National Committee at a pivotal time for both Donald Trump and the Republican Party. Trump is close to locking up his third consecutive presidential nomination and continues to exert dominance over a party he has already completely transformed since his 2016 election victory. At the same time, Trump is about to hit a serious cash crunch stemming from his numerous court battles, and there are questions over whether he'll continue to tap his own political operation and the Republican National Committee itself to pay the legal bills. The Republican National Committee, which ended 2023 historically low on funds, can't quite afford that. A Trump official told the website Axios that no RNC cash would go to Trump's legal defense, but there are possible ways around that. On top of everything else, one of the chief goals of the new leadership group is to transfer more Republican National Committee money to state party organizations, particularly those in the battleground states, according to a Republican source familiar with the plans. In states like Michigan and Arizona, two pivotal battleground states, they could desperately use the transfers, with both GOP organizations close to going broke. Despite the enormous challenges, this new triumvirate is inspiring optimism both in Trump world and around the Republican National Committee, at least among those who aren't getting purged. Though Ronna McDaniel rose to the party's top position as an unflinching Trump loyalist, she fended off challengers to her leadership for much of the past year. In 2023, activist and lawyer Harmeet Dhillon ran against her RNC chair, citing a list of grievances, chiefly wasteful spending. Although Ronna McDaniel took heat over the lackluster 2024 midterm elections, McDaniel was ultimately undone by mounting clashes with Donald Trump over the party's finances and her refusal to cover his legal expenses. The website Politico has also covered the same story. Several senior Republican officials are concerned that Donald Trump's expected takeover of the Republican National Committee will ultimately pave the way for the committee to once again cover his legal bills. Those fears come in the aftermath of Donald Trump endorsing a trio of officials, including his own daughter-in-law, to take on top roles at the Republican National Committee. While those endorsements have been well received by many committee members, who note that it is customary for a presidential candidate to put his imprint on the party's main campaign apparatus, others fear a potential misallocation of party resources. Henry Barber, a Mississippi committee man, said he believed most RNC members will go along with Donald Trump's vision for the committee unless there is a play to use Republican National Committee funds for President Trump's legal expenses and bills. Oscar Brock, another committee member who has been critical of Donald Trump, said the budget that the Republican National Committee passed 2 weeks ago during a meeting in Las Vegas, Nevada, did not allocate any money to cover Trump's legal fees. But he acknowledged the possibility of the committee eventually amending its financial plan to do so, where Donald Trump to ask, a measure that Oscar Brock, the Tennessee committee man and a member of the RNC Budget Committee, said he would not support. I don't think it's appropriate for the committee to pay their legal bills for things done outside the work of the committee, Brock said. Chris LaCivita, a senior advisor to Trump's campaign, called fears about the RNC paying Donald Trump's legal bills manufactured. Rather than the committee covering the cost of Donald Trump's attorney fees, the money would be drawn from other sources, including Trump's leadership PAC, Save America, and the former president himself, who has been paying some legal bills out of pocket, according to senior advisors to his campaign. The Republican National Committee spent nearly $2 million on two legal firms working on Trump cases in 2021 and 2022, before stopping once Donald Trump jumped into the presidential campaign. The committee will continue to have a legal fund to pay for recount efforts, lawsuits, and typical party legal business. The American newspaper Huffington Post has also covered the same story. 3 years after agreeing to pay Donald Trump's legal fees on the rationale that cases against him were politically motivated, the Republican National Committee could face pressure from its coup-attempting presumed nominee to pay not just tens of millions of dollars more in legal fees, but more than $450 million in likely judgments against him. That's why he wants his people on the inside. It's not about building up MAGA, but rather getting MAGA to pay his legal bills, said former RNC chair Michael Steele, referring to the Make America Great Again motto that's become shorthand for Donald Trump's followers. The Republican National Committee and its donors have all been hoodwinked by the flim-flam man, said Jennifer Horn, a former chair of the New Hampshire Republican Party, and because of that, a former RNC member. There is no rationale for any of it that makes sense in a rational world. Although Donald Trump has won only a few dozen delegates of the 1,215 that he needs to secure the GOP presidential nomination, he announced this week that one of his top aides, Chris LaCivita, would take over the party's day-to-day operations, while his own daughter-in-law, Lara Trump, would become the RNC's co-chair. And that has some RNC members worried that the same logic party officials used to justify spending donor money on Donald Trump's legal fees in 2021 could now be offered as a reason to come as some or all of the $88 million he must pay E. Jean Carroll. And the $370 million or more he will likely have to pay the state of New York for business fraud. We're not in the business of indemnifying people for bad behavior, emphasized Oscar Brock, an RNC member from Tennessee. He added, also, we don't have $400 million. Last I heard, we have about $9 million, and that's already committed for salaries and bills.
Seven barometric pressure.
We come to you, and O God, knowing that thou art our only King.
You're listening to the program Bookshelf on IRIB English Radio with Brother Yasser Ibrahim.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته Dear listeners, welcome to another episode of Bookshelf on IRIB English Radio with me, Brother Yasser Ibrahim. One of the important subjects that I studied within the Islamic sciences is the science or the discipline of philosophy. Now, what must be distinguished here from the very beginning is that when we say philosophy, we do not mean a dry type of philosophy that is prevalent throughout the world. But rather, Islamic philosophy is a very rich discipline, a very rich corpus of philosophical works, which unfortunately has been ignored either purposefully, maliciously, or completely out of ignorance by many throughout the world. Islamic philosophy has a very long history, beginning right from the time of ancient Greek, or the ancient Greeks, from the time of Socrates coming down to the latest of the great, or rather the last of the great Islamic philosophers, Muhammad ibn Ibrahim al-Shirazi, better known as Mullah Sadra or Sadr al-Muta'alihin, with his transcendent philosophy, or what is known as Hikmat al-Muta'aliyah. Again, these are all within the school of Islamic philosophy, and it is a very important subject which I personally advise many of my dear listeners, if they have the opportunity to find a teacher, to go and dwell into some of the books of Islamic philosophy, because it is this Islamic philosophy that will give a person a worldview that is, you know, in coordinates with the Islamic belief structure and system. So anyway, the book that we would like to introduce to our dear listeners today is based on one of the Islamic philosophers and on Islamic philosophy. So inshallah, please stay tuned to our next segment where we will be introducing this book, inshallah.
Why do we read books in the first place? What are books good for?
We read books because we don't want to reinvent the wheel, if you will.
We'd better take advantage of human cultural and intellectual heritage, particularly related to our daily activities, such as our physical, mental, spiritual, or even religious health.
We can't ignore the past thoughts and experiences. To do so, we need to boost our bookshelf.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to our program Bookshelf on IRIB English Radio with me, Brother Yasser Ibrahim. So as mentioned in our previous segment, the book that we would like to introduce to our dear listeners is titled The Heart of Islamic Philosophy, The Quest for Self-Knowledge in the Teachings of Afdal al-Din Kashani. This book was written by Dr. William C. Chittick. It was published by Suhail Academy, which is in Lahore, Pakistan, in the year 2004. So basically this book, as per the inside cover, which we will read for the benefit of our dear listeners, says, this book introduces the work of an important medieval Islamic philosopher who is little known outside the Persian world. Afdal ad-Din Kashani was a contemporary of a number of important Muslim thinkers, including Averroes, who is Ibn Rushd, and Ibn al-Arabi, Muhyiddin ibn al-Arabi, which was the great Islamic mystic. Among philosophers who wrote in Persian, he is set apart by the remarkable beauty and clarity of his prose. Kashani made a considered choice to write in Persian at the time when Arabic was the language of choice for philosophy. Avoiding Arabic technical terms, he did not, in fact, write for advanced students of philosophy, but rather for beginners who might not have a good grasp of Arabic. Kashani's writings offer especially clear and insightful expositions of various philosophical positions. This makes him an invaluable resource for those who would like to learn the basic principle and arguments of this philosophical tradition, but do not have a strong background in philosophy and Islamic studies. As William Chittick notes, Kashani held the position that philosophy awakens people from forgetfulness and incites them to reach for the perfection of existence, because ignorance of self is the cause of the soul's misery in the next life. He sought to make philosophy as accessible as possible to everybody. This is the first book in English to present the main themes of the Islamic philosophical tradition in the words of a Muslim philosopher. Written in an accessible style, this volume will interest students and scholars of Islamic philosophy at all levels. So this is what the book actually entails. Just quickly, the contents. So the book, very quickly, has a preface and is set up into two parts. Islamic philosophy and then the writings of Afdal ad-Din Kashani. So inshallah, in our next segment, we will be reading a short portion of this book for the benefit of our dear listeners. For the benefit of our dear listeners, so please stay tuned.
Among the sacred texts we have received to help us understand where we came from and where we are going as a human race are most rich in helping us find our direction. They narrate stories of our past. But where have they brought us? Where are their messages now? Are we the people of belief, or have we become the people of the boxes? Is there wisdom trapped in our bookshelves? Bookshelves, bookshelves, bookshelves.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to our program Bookshelf on IRIB English Radio with me, Brother Yasser Ibrahim. The book that we introduce to our listeners today is titled The Heart of Islamic Philosophy. It is a book that details the philosophical opinions of Afdal ad-Din Kashani It was written and translated by Dr. William Chittick and published by Suhail Academy in Lahore, Pakistan. So the section that we would like to read from is the sixth section, Writings on Theory. The book has a lot of poetry on it, but we will skip the poetry and get straight to the essays or the text. So one of the essays that is here is Essay on Self-Awareness. Know that living bodies are not outside of two. Either life in them pertains to the root and is essential, or it is alien and accidental. It does not pertain to the root and is not essential, so it is alien and accidental. If it does not pertain to the root and is not essential, so it is alien and accidental. That thing whose life pertains to the root and is essential is not the body. When something's life pertains to the root and is essential, knowing is either an attribute that also pertains to the root and is essential, or it does not pertain to the root and is not essential. And the thing knows through others, knowing does not pertain to the root and is not essential. Otherwise, whenever the name living correctly fell on something, it would be a knower. Hence the living thing knows through something else. The thing that knows is either a knower through self or a knower through other than itself. It is not a knower through self. It is a knower through that which is a knower through self. And so on and so forth. So this is the writings and some of the philosophical teachings of Afdhal ad-Din Kashani. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in order for us by the words to actually truly know ourselves, because of the famous tradition of the Holy Prophet, that he who knows himself knows his Lord. Inshallah, until next time. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
That was the program Bookshelf with Brother Yasser Ibrahim on RIB English Radio.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.